Is it okay that a member of the Commonwealth can host three meetings at which the discussion of a plot to assassinate a head of state in the Commonwealth take place? We should sit down and say, yes, Pastor, that's okay.
We dialogue all the time. Dialogue does not solve anything. Dialogue is a human condition and a permanent human condition. People want action, and the time for action has come. The kind of action that will lead to an outcome. And the outcome must be a democratic outcome without ZANU-PF and without Robert Mugabe. There must be action. But action of that kind is not televised. It is not ad hoc news. It has to be carefully planned, and it has to be pursued with dedication and commitment.
What greater intimidation is there than a leader of a political party supported by some powerful countries in the world calling on a powerful neighbor to cut off electricity, cut off fuel supply, cut off transport links? Is that not intimidation?
On this special and somewhat personal episode of Inside Politics, I want to celebrate a truly remarkable individual. Not only has he achieved success in multiple fields as a professor of political science, government minister, author, and a musician, but he's also known for his extraordinary decency and loyalty as a human being. Those who are fortunate enough to know him personally can attest to his unwavering commitment to his friends and colleagues, and his willingness to stand up for what he believes in, even in the face of adversity. One of his defining traits is intellectual humility, something I first encountered when I worked with him 10 years ago. He was always willing to listen to new ideas and showed a genuine interest in young people as generators of fresh thinking. He was also willing to take risks in advancing opportunities. He handed me control of the largest newspaper in the country at the age of 27. And encouraged me to seize the opportunity with both hands. This experience really demonstrated, at least for me, his generosity and mentorship towards younger generations and his belief in the value of new perspectives. Overall, I consider him to be a truly remarkable individual, and I'm grateful to have had the opportunity to learn from him. In addition to his serious side, he also has a wicked sense of humor and is not one to take himself too seriously. Join me as I pay tribute to this extraordinary man whom I am proud to call my friend and all he has accomplished. Happy birthday. Professor Jonathan Moyo. One of the criticisms I get when people are trying to get on my nerves or to get under my skin, and I've noticed Chofamba does this. I think he posted something some time ago and he said something to the effect that your Jonathan Moyo's servant, something to that effect. And I can understand why they would think that's the dynamic in our relationship, because they don't understand the nature of the relationship or even how I got to know Professor Moyo. But I thought it was important to pay tribute to somebody who has been quite influential in my life and who gave me and has continued to give me significant opportunities. And so this is the story of how I met Professor Jonathan Moyo. And then I will be a bit presumptuous and purport to tell you who Professor Jonathan Moyo is. I've known him for the past 10 years. I observe of people online and just generally in the society that he's not someone who's understood. I was going to say well understood. I don't believe that he's understood. I think some people understand, or a lot of people understand, that he's very smart. But beyond that, I don't think he's understood. In fact, I don't actually think he's understood to the extent to which he is a smart guy. He's up there. But this is my honest account of the man that I've known for the past 10 years, and a man that I'm proud to call my friend, Professor Jonathan Moyo. Happy 66th birthday. 66, not 65. Ah, mafamba mkuru. Mafamba. Have a good one. Enjoy it. the story only makes sense if I give the full context of how I meet Professor Moyo. So I'm living in the UK, and I start newzimbabwe.com. There's a vulnerability there that I start exploiting through the Onion browser. You know, this Tor browser, I start using it. There's a vulnerability in the common system that allows me to reset it each time and start voting my comments upwards. And I'm running this account that I call a Maijukwa. And I subtlety's never been my strong suit, so I should have rigged it reasonably. And it was like rigging a supposedly democratic election and getting 99% of the vote. So if the typical good comment was getting 33 votes, I would give my Juka 400. So eventually the New Zimbabwe guys get on to me, like something is going on. And I can't remember how they made contact, but I got an email from Gilbert Nyambabu, who is now the editor. He's back at newzimbabwe.com. And he says, whatever you're doing, please stop. I said, well, I'm not doing anything. But if I was doing something, perhaps I might be persuaded with a column. If you give me some space to write, then perhaps if I am doing something, I'll stop. And he says, well, send me some copy and let's see. But whatever you're doing, stop. So I sent him some copy and they liked it. And that's how I start writing. But I'm writing anonymously. They don't know who I am. And I just start writing this column. And eventually I catch the attention and I'm in this space where, which is partly what causes problems for me when I then get back. But I don't want to get into too much of that detail, actually. But I'm in an interesting space that living in England and sort of starting to see the hypocrisy of Western society up front, that my sympathies for ZANU-PF were kindled. My sympathies for ZANU-PF were kindled, not so much that I wasn't aware of what they had gotten wrong or what they were guilty of, but more of that the justifications that were being used, namely democracy and human rights, could not possibly be the real basis for those actions, because I was surprised to find that the Queen was having tea and biscuits with tyrants from Saudi Arabia. So this is sort of the birth of my political consciousness, or what I thought was political consciousness, I should say. And this is when I get, I'm in almost 23, 24. That's when I get into this sort of new kind of thinking and start writing. I'm writing the African Aristocrat website, which I would sign off and say, I would sign off saying, writing from the comforts of a Western democracy, I am the African Aristocrat. Oh, wow, wow. And then, well, back to newzimbabwe.com, I start writing. And then I catch, because of the way I was quite critical of the West and I was defending ZANU-PF, I catch the eye of Rugari Gumbo. And he gets in touch with newzimbabwe.com. And he says, listen, can we get the contacts of this Maijubwa character? So I get an email from Gilbert and he says, listen, the ZANU-PF guys are trying to get your contacts. So I said, no, not a chance. I'm anonymous. I don't intend to reveal my identity, and that's the end of it. So he says, okay. So I think he says it about two times. The third time he comes again, I say the same thing. I say no. And then he says to me, listen, I understand why you might be concerned and unwilling to accept, but there might be an opportunity for you here. So now the moment somebody talks about money, I tend to wake up. I said, what kind of opportunity? And Gilbert, you know, and if it wasn't for Gilbert, life would be in a very, very different place. But he managed to get me to see that there was an opportunity. So next thing is I get a phone call from Rugare Gumbo. He says, look, am I, and so on. And we laugh and he says, come. I said, no, but I need money. He says, we don't have any money, but we can give you a farm. I said, you don't have title deeds. And we chuckled and so on. And yeah, then eventually he said, well, we'll give you some money, but don't charge us too much and so on. And eventually I get to Zimbabwe some months later for the election campaign. And this is why I was quite irritated in 2014 when I got out of prison and I read that Rugare Gumbo was such a coward that he had lied that I had come as a volunteer. And he had not told the truth that he's the one who had phoned me and requested me to come. Yes, so that aspect of it annoyed me slightly, that he had claimed that I'd come of my own volition, of my own initiative as a volunteer, and that they had actually not, he had not invited me. I suppose everybody wanted to run away, and this is where my respect, my gratitude for Professor Moyo comes, because throughout that entire incident, and this is true, this was not something that he did for me, this is an aspect of his nature that's consistent in all his dealings. Because Professor Moyo, all the people I had interacted with, and I had interacted with people in government, he's the one who stood. He's the one who stood forcefully. Many years later, I didn't know this, Patrick João Mugabe's nephew told me about a meeting that he had with Mugabe and what he said to Mugabe about me. And it's not the sort of thing, you know, when people see, I know, she took up prof, really stupid, but Twitter and so on, and Ndika Pindira, I think, like, what the hell are you talking about? You can't, you know, there's no way. There's no way, you know, I'd be a fool. Then Ribenzi, you know, because I nearly cost the guy his job. It would have been so much easier for Professor Moyo to just say, listen, Mfano Ega Antombo Sionzi, Shintofunduko Tilainae. But that's not what he did. He took a very principled position. So I get to the final detail of how we meet Professor Moyo, and I'll be done in less than a minute. So I eventually get there. I'm sitting in the waiting room of Rugare Gumbo's office. There's a lady there who becomes quite an important person in terms of showing me around the information space. I won't mention her name, but I salute her. And I'm sitting in there, and she's being quite abrupt, but that's her nature. But she's playful, but I know who green us. So if you can also not mirror the straight run or who funduga. But I sort of got the energy, and I was able to play along. And we were about to strike up some kind of friendship, and Professor Moyo was walking past. So So as he walked into to greet her, he said, I know you. He says, ah, yes, I know you. I mind you guys. So that's how we met. And he says, look, I am working on the manifesto, what, and so on. And we chatted. My first impressions of him was that he was extremely rude. That's your impression. If you don't understand, my impression, because I said something stupid, you see. I only realized some years later, like, oh, wow, that was actually quite idiotic. And he was responding appropriately. But yes, those were my first impressions. And eventually, I was then assigned through Rugare Gumbo to work with Professor Moyo. And we worked very well together. And after that, he said, what's the plan? I said, oh, I'm going back to England. He says, oh, why don't you stay and see how you can work with this government that you've helped elect? And for me, it was a no-brainer. It was just really straightforward, because I'd worked very well with him. We'd done great work that was reviewed in the Financial Times. We just did great work. It was a beautiful thing. We played it well. It was a good combination, you know, and I learned a lot in a very short space of time beyond the technical skill.
So that's how I meet with Professor Moyo, and then 2014, he extends a huge opportunity, appointing me the youngest Sunday Mail editor at the age of 27. And I was terrified when he did. And he said to me, listen, kid, what you lack is experience, and that's what I want to give you. You've got what it takes. Seize this opportunity with both hands. And I did. I did. 3 months, sales were up 18%. 3 months. I didn't last long, but I delivered the goods. I didn't disappoint. But I ran ahead of myself. Now we talk about Professor Jonathan Moyo, and we'll come back to the history much later on. Back in a moment. A lot of times in life, people want to give people their roses in obituaries when they're gone. And I thought the occasion of Professor's 66th birthday. I thought it was 65, but it's actually 66. He was 56 when I met him. The thing that struck me most was just the amount of energy. He had the energy of a guy who's like 30. He had lots of energy. He's slowed down a bit. He's just not going to say, he doesn't want to. He can and he does do it, but these days you see Ishamar, see Takura, and you know, good, I know Mukuru. I'd say perhaps he's working at the age of somebody who's 45. He's
young at heart. He's young at heart. He's young at heart, and I suppose the thing that is most prominent is which is where I have to start. My first impression of Professor Moyo when I met him was like, damn, this guy is rude. I can't remember what I said, but I said something idiotic. When I met him with ZANU-BF HQ, you know, like nervous energy, you know, like when you're nervous. I can't remember, it was something about the manifesto, and I said something, and he just answered,
But as I worked with him, and if you don't work with him, you can, or if you don't manage to know him personally, you can misunderstand. Because his mind is working in a very different way. But there's no sense. Oh, wow. Wow. It's been great. But what first struck me, and what perhaps, it was very strange to me when I met him, and the seriousness with which he engaged me, not as a student, but as an intellectual equal. And as I said in the introduction, that one of his defining traits is intellectual humility. You know, van majinji varimuma positions of authority, vanita chi chef chef so, you know. You know, they walk with a certain step, you know, a seriousness, like, yeah, it is one of Shika, okay, Masora Sekorana. Oh, no, he's not like that. He's not like that. He has not even the slightest hint of self importance. None. He engages on the substantive issues, whether you're 16 years old, you're 25, you're 35, it doesn't matter. He's interested in the idea. He He's interested in what you're talking about. And if you are making sense, he will engage you. He's not concerned about your station. He's not concerned about how much money you have. He's concerned about ideas. And this is a defining trait. But if I was asked to talk about Professor from a personality standpoint to describe him, if I was asked to talk about Professor Moyo from a personality standpoint, your first impression is he's really forthright. He's not a frivolous guy, and for you to understand what's going on, you need to spend some time with him. Professor Moyo is not the kind of person you ask for advice if you don't really want the advice, because he will give you the advice, and you will see when he gives you the advice that what he's telling you is well considered. He's not the kind of person that you ask for his opinion or his help on an intellectual piece of work, because he will, his yes is a yes, and his no is a no. And if he commits to a project, if he says yes, then oh, you're very lucky, because he comes in as though he gives you his 100%. He will come in with a dedication to that project as though he was doing it for Robert Mugabe. His yes is a yes, and his no is a no. And typically, he says no to a lot of things that people ask, because he's not doing it. He's not a frivolous guy. He's not a guy who you say, look, let's come and work on this project. Then he comes there just to play games and be silly. The moment he says yes, then he's bringing the full force of his intellect, whatever it is that you're doing. So it's a demanding thing.
I don't think you can have a talk about who is Jonathan Moyo without having to confront the perception in some, just people generally who are watching through a television set or watching some tool happen on Twitter,
that he's this abrasive guy who's eager to fight. Hardly. He's a tough guy with a lot of intellectual humility, who believes that he should engage with anyone and everyone who has ideas. That's the philosophy. But when he engages you with respect. So he expects you to be able to respond, to engage in the conversation. Whereas sometimes people think that they are supposed to be handled with kid gloves. But it's absurd. Why are you having an argument with the professor if you want to be handled with kid gloves? Why even enter the conversation or the debate?
CNA night. You see, vanwa vakuru vazhinji vaneka chef chef sorry ndine baba ndiri pano vanangu masera saiko all right muna ndofamba bichana bichana leka step kangu ke munhu mukuru aka mundiremekeza ndiri gudu 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 guru rokupeta muswe.
Professor Moyo ana chef chef. He's not a frivolous guy. He's a substantive guy, and he's going to engage on issues. Would it be a better society, or would we be worse off, if half our politicians were willing to engage openly and have a debate and come out and get on a Zoom and talk about issues, talk about what's going on in the society? How many government ministers are prepared to go to the press club in front of the journalists and be asked questions that they haven't had a chance to prepare for? Not too many. How many are accessible to the extent that you were to send them an email with questions that they would certainly respond to? How many? It's not too many. So my estimation of it is that people are dishonest, and this is not the foundational issue. That's what I'm about to get into. But I thought I'd start off with that the vast majority of people engage in conversations that they're ill-equipped for. And when the person you're engaging with comes in hard, what do you expect? A cup of tea and biscuits.
Doka ronzi akavaka.
Nanzi debate. Debate. Guys, they want the debate. You need to debate and you prove Ramzana. Wrong. It's not a debate.
kuna debate rakadaro. So people become offended. And this was because I tried to understand this, because after I had a chance to start to work with the guy, I started to think about it. But what exactly is this issue? Because I remember before the coup, one lady, I mean, my so I need to chance, you know,
we're destroying this country, is Jonathan Moyo.
You wonder what the hell is going on. And then it became clear to me, like, no, having worked with him, because the thing with Professor is he's precise. Yeah. If I was to be asked what his superpower is, I would say it's precision. He's a precise thinker. He's very precise. He's very deliberate in what he says. And he thinks about what he's saying. And what he's saying is generally well considered. So if he takes a position, and I'll give you the example in this whole Chamisa structures thing, because I took a slightly different direction, and I'll talk about that just now. So what I suspect happens is Jonathan Moyo gets on the stage, and he's ZANU-PF's spokesperson. Then he's the information minister. And because he's a precise guy, he's difficult to catch. And the worst thing that could possibly have happened to him was getting the minister of information job, because once he has the job, he has to do the work. And every day, my opposition party was no and around but 40,000 cheesy. Yes, opposition. Can you have a dig easy? Spokesperson Anto Skutskutwa. But there's no space where I see an accusation that Jonathan Moyo was lying. I don't see that at all. You'll get allegations like Jonathan Moyo bombed the Daily News. Yeah, you'd have to be completely ignorant of the structure of Zimbabwe's security apparatus to think that my general, I know, Minister of Information, Oh God, wow, it's crazy. Complete madness. These are the kinds of flimsy accusations you hear thrown against the guy. It's not substantive. Because Zimbabwe, at his van, I made up a choke party. See, because I know Shamari won't go now to Kunda. Ah, this is a good show. A teenager, much to die, Wakana to Mzora Ne. You see, and this is what happens. Jonathan Moyo comes on the scene when ZANU PF is going down. ZANU PF is going down, and this rejection of the constitution wakes them up, and that's part of where the resentment comes from. That if there wasn't this whole energetic constitution thing, which was rejected despite it having been the best, it's better than the 2013 constitution that we ended up getting. And the only reason why it was rejected was not because it was a bad constitution. It was for political reasons. No, we can't cooperate with them. But you know, tunge kase nyika manje kana tichiti. That constitution was certainly, there's no one who will disagree with that. That constitution which was rejected was better than what we have now, which came out of the GNU. And if that constitution had been adopted, and all it would have taken was the opposition to not resist. But anyhow, following this launch, then Jonathan Moyo gets now full throttle on the scene. And I think part of the resentment comes from the fact that he is accused, perhaps rightly so, of having reinvigorated ZANU-PF. Yes, that's part of the issue. But the real substantive issue why a lot of people have so much resentment is that they were not able to beat him. The Jonathan Moyo has stupid on. Now, Kanori spokesperson will remain there. My name is Atichi. At a press conference, but at Manangu, a point to Ina, the Mugaba Taza, but no more right Manang. I know, but Mugabe Mataza. It's outrageous, crazy. Bakambo, no shit, Gabu. Kupi. So his great misfortune is being appointed information minister, because I think he did the job too well, which is a kind of inevitability that he really has no option than to do
the job well. Jonathan Moyo is not a 50-50 kind of guy. If he says yes, whether you're drafting a letter or a legal argument or whatever it is that you're working on, if you solicit his opinion, he comes with his full intellectual resources to play the game. So it was sort of inevitable that he would end up being the face of ZANU-PF. But you go to Cholocho right now and you ask the residents of Cholocho to say, let's have an approval rating. You know, let's look at how much do you approve of this guy. He will definitely have a much higher approval rating than a lot of opposition members of parliament because he was an effective guy. Jonathan Moyo, Jonathan Moyo arutaka maskiri kunzi ndibuditse mari ndibe nepapi. Munhu arikuita zvinhu zvevanhu. You look at go on J Store and just type in Jonathan Moyo. Don't type in Jonathan Moyo. You look at papers he was writing in 1992 talking about the land reform. When we're working with Nelson, and we'll get into more detail about this later on, I just want to have a quick overview so that those who want to just get a gist of what's going on without too much detail can pick it up in 20 minutes and be gone. You go to JSTOR and you look at what Jonathan Moyo is writing in 1992. He's talking about the land reform. He's talking about the land reform, that the pace of the land reform is not going fast enough. Now, someone will say to you, well, the land reform was a bad idea. And this is now where the disconnect happens, that there's a conversation that's happening at completely different levels. And perhaps it's impossible for these people to connect because they're operating in two very different paradigms. Someone will say, well, the land reform was a really bad idea. Look at all these wonderful white farmers who were growing potatoes and flowers and shipping them off and with all this foreign currency. And now it's lying fallow and nothing is happening. Yeah, it seems like a fair point. But then until you look at how much time it took the Rhodesians to actually get that land productive, why would it take Zimbabwe 5 years when it took the Rhodesians more than 50? If you'd have a conversation about the typical person, if you're going to have a conversation about the economy, they're going to lean heavily into the markets. They have so much confidence in the markets. But there's a nuance to it. There's a consideration of the ecology. What is the environment? Where are markets useful? Are markets wholly useful and perfect? Well, if they are, then what happened with the 2008 bailouts? Why didn't we let the market sort that out? So always there's a bailout coming. Someone is getting saved by taxpayer dollars, but it's never the poor guy who's getting that bailout. And if you read Karl Polanyi's The Great Transformation, that's a very good picture of where Jonathan Moyo is, the level of nuance. If you read that book, you gain an understanding of how Professor Moyo would be approaching an issue such as land reform, that for him, he fully expects that there's going to be a fight, that there's going to be a pushback by capital, that things are going to be difficult. This is where he pens Rambai Makashinga. He's anticipating it. He can see it coming. But for him, it's an intergenerational thing, that you're creating the foundation for wealth. The moment you move the land out of the group, the hands of 4,000 people, and you move it into 260,000 families, households, that's significant. Now, someone who's not followed him or tried to go back, because I was a child when this is happening, like 1992, if you haven't gone back to see what he's talking about in 1992, it's quite possible that you can walk away with the impression that, oh no, you know, this guy is just an opportunistic guy who saw an opportunity to get into government and he had no principles. He was previously criticizing the government, but now here he is leading the land reform, saying Rambai Makashinga, no. He was criticizing the government. Murukunonoka land reform. You're taking too much time. Let's move. That's what he was doing. So just to jump back, and I'll become a lot more organized later on. I'm just switching through different places for the benefit of those who don't have time. When we're working, and I'm trying to set the foundation of the state of mind, when we're working with Nelson, and one of the things that I'm embarrassed about, I'm ashamed of, is the fact that I worked with Nelson. But what I'm even more embarrassed about is the fact that I convinced Professor Moyo to work with Nelson. And
I persuaded him, and he deferred. He says, look, you believe in this guy. Yeah, let's give it a go. But ndakazo nyara ne unu wakaitwa na Nelson. Instead of Nelson realizing what you know, the opportunity that was in front of him and how he could make use of this powerful intellectual resource, Nelson anononge zvinhu zvekutamba nazvo izi. So someone who akaitirwa izvi izi anotosangana nanzi inini Jonathan Moyo anytime no notara naye kai ndara wangu izi anytime izi but IT processor ona zngirngir hello the processor muna anenge ane munhu ari pa side you see vanenge ati andikatomufonera andodaira izvi izi hunhu wakaita sei wo muna akakuti Mr. President vamuka sei don't lose your mind shamarika muna ari kungokuremekedza nzvimbo chako. But you can't violate trust and betray confidence. Zonei someone mukuru pa loud speaker kuti uganze neto askana kuti ndino. It's one of my regrets. But he said something to me because I was initially we work with Nelson. Then sometime in he's just doing these outrageous things. I say you gonna prof I'm dara gashi na chai tei chinda kubuda shkans ah. And I realized, like, damn, he's right. So I thought I'd stay in there, but sometime in 2021, I can't remember when, I just said no, I can't. In Inda Buddha my paper, I just said, Prof. By that time, now they were dealing one-on-one, because initially I was dealing a prof in Ini, and three intermediaries and so on. But eventually, they started to deliver it too, so. Instead of me passing the papers to prof, it was now prof passing the papers to me. And they got, nangu ma paper, mkuma no ya ni chada. Tai mega. Na yuri chamisa, I go na kutu, no. Hey, prof, please, nibate yon draku tinditeji, breaking barriers initiative. Manike yu Kenya, ndi draft reo ka document. Mukuru ganda kuzega wanzi kandavati paru kita izi. He goes in there with all his intellectual and he produces a beautiful document. And that's the last it's spoken about. And I was like, no, document ramakandi pare and takas not kade anongoti muchumtumira document rare so. Asa taru mwana gana tell me you can zwang, what are you ringing anguai? Na, 10 minutes after phone, I go, my wee. This is powerful. This is oh, it's good, God. No, him dara ndo shawanita. Oh. That's the end of the story. Don't play with so these are things that are happening. But he said something to me. The reason why I'm telling this story is something about his disposition and his view of people's responsibility in society. The first time I wanted to quit Nelson's political project, he says, listen, Edmund, I know that Nelson is a bit of a woo, but you are close to him, you have access to him, and you can influence him in a positive way. So you might want to look beyond your personal irritations and consider how your relationship with him would work out for the national good by trying to be a positive influence as much as you can. It's not an argument that you can fault. So people will say, like, but you were part of ZANU PF. Yes, he was. What would have been better off? You were supposed to quit and let it go in whatever direction it goes. That's not who he is. You'll find Professor Moyo. He is conscious intuitively of his civic duty. You look at his seminal work on voting for democracy, 1992. You've got Vana John Makumbe. They cite that book authoritatively. The calculations. He is a substantive guy. Go check it out. Go read the book. So if you want to understand who Jonathan Moyo is and sort of understand the humility that it takes for him to be taking abuse on Twitter and trying to generate and maintain conversation in the society, that's who he is. So when the opportunity arose for a constitution, a new constitution, it was a no-brainer. There's no one who can stand up today and explain why they voted no. People voted no. And afterwards, what are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to jump into bed in partnership with people who sabotage something that's actually good for the country? And there's no one, Muga Vunzana, Professor Maduku, the authorities, but it's no who said, ah, no. I'd be happy to hear somebody out who takes a different view. So yes, this is where we start with Professor Moyo. This is now my analysis of what's going on. And he is put in this position which allows him to, which puts him as the face of this thing. With a result that now people will say outrageous things like, no, Jonathan Moore is the one who bombed the Daily News. Like I said earlier, it's outrageous. But if you boomer, you're my general, I got to go to my barracks because I know Zimbabwe is not a kuvenga. Nekutuma Zimbabwe, atikwani se kuvuma kuti ano. Same thing with the vaccine. You find all these cocky, pompous doctors who were. There's one doctor I saw in their group saying, the government must do something about Edmund Kudzai. He's undermining the vaccine campaign. Kuti malima msunga. Tapa bijiri. Hakuna kana one. Iremba kawe ya kata. Ah, ukomana unemuonu. Wakati unasi. Hakuna. Antarisa kusaidu unge pasina raichika. Nekuti atizi vanu vanobvuma. We're not magnanimous. We're not gracious in defeat. No, but kana. So this is the fight, Professor Moyo. You can't tell me people are talking about, somebody will say, Jonathan Moyo, you destroyed this country. No. Maita ma jingles, mshiriza, rambai makashinga through the entire day. Well, actually, no. Yes, he wrote Rambai Magashinga. And we'll talk about that music later on. That was the Minister of Agriculture. He writes the song. Minister of Agriculture says, oh, this is brilliant. They book adverts with the ZBC. They pay for them. And they say, run this thing for us every whatever. Ashne China Jonathan Moyo. In Munagatara podcast, Rene Ragatanga Kuriza pa ZBC, Kuriza. Outrageous. But again, it's not a substantive issue. Vanhu vanenge vatadza ku prevail on the intellectual terrain and they turn to ma frivolous attacks and frivolous accusations. This is where the issue is. And it doesn't surprise me because I've worked with Professor since 2013. I've worked with him on several projects, even after the coup. I've continued to work with Professor Moyo. Not in Zimbabwe, outside, consulting on different projects. One place I got called to, I got there, and I'm reading a document and I'm thinking, oh, this document feels quite peculiar. Because it kind of Jonathan Moyo-ish. In the evening, I'm going to bed and I get a message and say, congratulations, Edmund. I think this is what hit the one who recommended me to go there. But you could tell by writing that this looks like Professor Moyo. He's a smart guy. But that intellectual humility that you can go on Twitter and engage with everybody else without brandishing your credentials and taking an argument for what it is and dissecting it for what it is without any credentialism, that's admirable. We need more leaders who have that disposition. But vanoramba kuya vachitiza vachitya. This is the society. Atizi vanhu vaka mira pachokwadi. Tataura zvekunzi
Hakuna munu doctor kana one.
Zimbabwe muno.
Atandi pindira kana mdm. Ah, yamari nae shatala uraisa vanu nae. Uyu kuzaya onguwa shuna se. Kutumumire uruwega. Nyikese chitino vanu. Wese kuma Jackson. Right is not our culture. Atizi vanu. Atizi ma gentleman anoguma. Ah, yamari apa wakona. Atidaro. Tinongo kuzaya shuro chete kana urimunu webato redu. Namuna chinza enda ku Middle East uko zvima sheikh zvinouraya vanhu uko. Tons apiwa award ye journalism. Aya, mwari tibazire. Anza apiwa award ye journalism. Nani? Hanzi na sheikh. Aya, kanyika kanaka. Mbeo yache ne, pane something. Mbewe yacho, pani something jineitika. Hakuna kana munu wana nupunzo. But ime murugoti muna api wa award. Na sheikh, mnika mawa muno. Mune freedom mereye kutimite journalism. Kuna no story. Nekuti chinu wani, chawara kupembeza, wala kuti uyari kuti ibiredu. Tawari anything chiri negative. Uyu. Paite mananana. Amna ngagwa izi, Professor Moyo. Ah, my friend, getting grossy. Comes, ah, no, and he's so good. Oh, you're so clever, G. Bagas at Vagomana in Inikus in the room, Kuru Ningans, and do not support and the battle is Nama structure. Gunzi Mkuru battle racho. Abana constitution, Abana structure. Mkuru battle and Gorongoti. Pagat Pel Siku. Eh. Kachinja should Jamira so Akuna no Vunza cannot see. Ah, no, Vagomana did get red anisi. What a reasonable person would say. Ah, matukirajo. Matukirajo. Jinochikisa. 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 So you'll hear somebody say, I think Tofamba stole it. And I don't know if it's a real person or some troll. I don't know if my gyro says, Edmund Kudzai can't think for himself. He's Jonathan Moyo's puppet. Oh God! Wow. And they sort of imagine that I'm making tea for Professor Moyo. But she shannons manandi throw tea. I'm working at Professor Moyo Street too, and he wants a cup of tea. I'd make it. Munumukuru, old enough to be my father. It's a great privilege to be his friend. It's not. Don't know to man now, but dogs are true. My face is pinned up a dog. I mean, I'm pinned. I can't, but that's not the dynamic that's there. And people who don't understand the history of how I met Professor Moyo, in fact, I got to talk to encounter Nanana, like a square face, and I got a gumbo before Professor Moyo. But when I got to work with him, I was certain this one is interesting. Very interesting. Interesting conversation. Stimulating. And loves to teach. And he doesn't... Vana Brian Kagoro, vana Dr. Gapa, Vankwaru Winter School, yeah, Professor Moyo.
He's a very good judge of character. Now, what happens with me is I meet him during the election. We work together. And for some reason, he reads me correctly. I'm very straight to you. And there's a day, there was a restaurant, Yangeripo, a Portuguese restaurant, Yangeripo Pomonapo. There's a day that he had lunch there with Kasukwere and he invited me. It's the stories you'll never hear about. It's the real politics. That happens. I almost said, "Ah, naiva kuruku, no muno garashanga rogo mutaure niya zindo zozogon." But he knew that he's a very good judge of character because that would have been like risky stuff. Because naiva rotongo di chibuda iba pandongo di manwe ndi putra go number zawa ningi pan shandra kuwa uzaji ndi payo 50,000 ndi information.
That's what most people would do. That's what most people would do, you know. And but for some reason, he had confidence in me. And in 2014, this is 2013, when he says to me, it's time. Choose where you want to go. Three options. Karamba is the one who saved me from a bad one. He says, I could have done the work technically, but there was just too much surrounding it. And eventually got to the Sunday Mail. But I was quite nervous. And he says to me, you can do it. You've got the goods. What you now need is experience. And that's what I'm giving you. And he said something to me. He says, this is an opportunity. I want you to seize it with both hands. You've got a gift. And I did seize it with both hands. Go to Zim Papers and ask them. Sales up 18% in 3 months. It's not trivial. How was he able to tell that I could pull it off? He's a very good judge of character. Nyayat Zamara, who disappeared. And goes, you said Zamara had skipped the border. Of course, everybody thought. And this is where you see the moral, the immorality, the dishonesty. The people who level these accusations, people in the opposition make it seem as though Zamara was one of them. No, he was not. He was an outcast. Zamara was an outcast in the opposition. Akatanga kuhabilitate, but after there was now political capital associated with his name. That's what happened. Now, when Zamara disappears, I didn't know who Zamara was, and I read the story and got, who's the guy? I went online and read a few articles about the guy, and I thought, but that was my initial inclinations. He's going to surface in a few months. And I understand within government there'd been a presentation by someone, let's just say that, who had said, we've got intelligence, he skipped the border, gee, and so on. Now, at this level of government, this is a report that's been given. Straightforward. But as time began to pass, it became apparent, like, no, there's no way he could have been, the system would not let him get away with this. They were going to sniff out, but he was man enough to come out and say, how many people in government since independence have had the courage to take a position when the moon uyu? But you find, because it's not about the truth. It's about what can you use, no matter how dishonest it is, to disarm someone who you're not able to engage with on an intellectual plane. I was, a girlfriend, ga. Oh God, wow. The girlfriend. So that's my estimation of where the bad blood comes from. Now, obviously, there's the perception that people project, you know, people see you, they assume that you're this kind of person, but it's only really the people who deal with you every day who recognize what kind of person you are. And I want to talk about the whole Baba Jukwa scandal and the CIO, Maim Juru, getting exactly, you know, people say, oh, Jonathan Moyo worked with Vanamunangagwa to get rid of Maim Juru. That was wrong. No, it was not. Maim Juru got exactly what she deserved. Maim Juru got exactly what she deserved. Baga pickets were size years. There are rabo chayo chayo chayo. I'll tell you more about what Maim Juru did. It's in the public domain. It's not a secret. Is it the suggestion that Maim Juru can attack politically with falsehoods and lies to destroy innocent people? And put young, innocent men in prison to advance her political ambitions, and she's supposed to get away with it because she's a woman, is an outrage. It's complete nonsense. When I saw Maim Juru go down, I danced a jig and said, well done. Because he was in beast mode. When he's just survived, he was in beast mode. We're going to talk about all of that. It's a long podcast, but it has to be a long podcast because I want to ventilate a number of issues that have been discussed from a point of ignorance. But Jonathan Moyo is not as he seems. He is a leader in the society. He's a visionary. He's an intellectual. He's a thinker. As Munu Akachipa, you see. There's this book that runs The Wealth of Nations that students of politics will be familiar with. Then there's a book by Alberto Guerrero Ramos, a Brazilian intellectual. He was a cabinet minister, active guy. He was a professor in the United States. And we don't understand who Jonathan Moyo is. Because he's my friend, people say, oh, of course you'll say that the guy is smart. What else can you say? Shamari Akoka. I want you to go on JSTOR and look for this book, or just Google it online, or just Google it. And I bumped into this inadvertently, and I asked him, oh, Ndara, I'm not with those skiri richi. And he says, what about it? He said, oh, it's all in the past, it's nonsense. As munu anita jeu chef, you see, because are shinzigans, but no zivaruz in Jova Tauru and Bukum. And I want to tell you what's said in this book about him to understand the mind, the power of that mind.
Vanatekere. Vanhu vangwari maclose kana Mugabe vakatandwa muzanu PF ikatofa yakaloda. He never came back. Mugabe has munhu kai kunzi nomitira zvino but anonda kuregerera regerere Mugabe kuregerera aregereri.
But Mugabe, he came back. Professor Moyo came back. The reason why he came back, and he comes back initially brought into the Central Committee, then the next year he's brought into the Politburo. That's 2010. And Mugabe says, you know, Mugabe says, Msoro damba, chiaka oma Msoro. And people will say, no, you were bootlicking. I bootlicka Mugabe. Ime. Nakana I bootlicka was Msoro damba pakuti chi. Zanga diri naro day the writer. Was he supposed to have Mugita Narana Mugabe to come out of a newspaper and look to Vakwa Mugabe? Shindamuzo jarita, she's right. Outrageous. Ainz Msoro damba. Inyaya yei, etaurwa. It can't be a serious society that says things that are apparently contradictory like that. But Mugabe says, I think this Mutare perhaps conference. He says, Mkomana wacho. This is something to the effect of Munomuziva Janoita. And you have to encounter that Jonathan Moyo. Shnita kunge shemunanim shonga on. Because Akatanga kuda kukubatira iso not he's got a gift. And in this book, Alberto Guerrero Ramos, Ironzi, the new sciences organizations, a reconceptualization of the wealth of nations. This book, Alberto Guerrero Ramos, this Brazilian academic, cabinet minister, distinguished guy, professor at University of South California, I think, where professor was a student. And in the acknowledgements of this book, this is a serious book. There's a name that's there, 1982. It's Jonathan Moyo. He's not a fellow lecturer. He's a student. He's not doing his PhD. He's not doing a master's. He's an undergrad. He's an undergrad who distinguishes himself to the point where the professor went, I thank these people for helping me clarify my thoughts. This is the depth that we're talking about. A professor as distinguished as this guy, a reconceptualization of the wealth of nations. That is amazing. You don't reconceptualize. No, reconceptualize a wealth of nations. And in that book, you have an undergrad, Achinzi, Dinokutenda, Jonathan Moyo. Wakaita kutindi wone. That's a mind. That's a mind. That's a mind. It's not trivial. So he can never talk about himself, but those of us who are around him can talk about him and tell the truth about who he is, and give him his roses while he's still alive. Man is brilliant. So we're going to go through different sections. Pax Afro, the music, what's happening with that history? Chicha Kaitika, what was going on? Pax Afro, it's an outrage. Can you imagine you go to Germany and you get on the train or a bus, or you're watching TV and they're playing music from Japan. But when TV is in Japan, crazy. There's no society that does Jino. Jokupenga Shagadaro. Another Moyo comes in and says, Imi, Murukita say, oh, Japan, no fara. People like Western music. Sagadu at Noriza, you know, very popular. How is the industry going to grow locally, unless you give it space? You have to take away the competition. You take away the competition, give it space. Otherwise, it'll be stifled. Local content. It wasn't 100%. I think it was 75%. But when ZBC wanga wasina mari manje, she created it, and so on. So I'm going to, thanks, Fena, to wonder, ne papa.
100%, that's not what the law said. But where are we now, 20 years later, 2 decades later? What is the fruit of that local content policy? Now you've got brilliant, man. Killer Teeth is now PE. I hardly listen to anything outside of Zimbabwean local music. Yeah, I've got some stuff I listen to, but I can keep myself really well entertained just locally. The quality, the standard of the music is now really up there. The different genres. Who opened the way? Vana Rocky Vaivai, Vana Decibel. Who opened? Vana Sunny Magalima. Who opened that? It took somebody with a vision. Mm-mm-mm. There's no way this thing will work if we get them to compete in Mariah Carey. She's got $10 million behind her. These kids don't. It's fine. Yeah, they're not going. But that's a visionary. You have to be able to see. Now, man, I know Chema. No, that's not what I mean. Besides, I'm Mariah Carey. I'm Mariah Carey. If you're a leader, what do? You say, ah, when I ever go Chema, I'm Mariah Carey. There's no need to hear it. But you don't hear any acknowledgements. You don't hear any acknowledgements to say, wow, what a guy. What a thinker. How did you see it? Makashwana say, ah, makagona tnuk tendai. Let's celebrate this man for this policy.
I'm telling you, I'm telling you, I'm telling you, I'm telling you, we're not gracious. No. What is it that we run it, but I'm kuru hapa. This was well spotted.
In these circumstances, the progressive democratic forces must throw everything at their disposal against the government.
Is it not intimidation for people who head a political party that wants to govern in this country to sit down with legislators in America and write a law which they call the Zimbabwe Democracy Bill? Is that not intimidation? They want to allow foreign legislators to make laws for us in advance of our election, telling the people of Zimbabwe, vote this way. If you vote that way, we will slap these sanctions on you. You want to talk to us about intimidation? Is it not intimidation to have 15 powerful European countries slapping so-called smart sanctions, which at the end of the day are very foolish? Is that not intimidation? Through this trash report by that team of Abu Bakr?
When I brought Professor Moyo and persuaded him, Dagaba Nesa, 3 weeks. I said, I'm about sick actually. And I was like, I know Nelson, I got sick actually. I don't see her. Mkomanoy, he's not presidential material. But I was very persuasive. Until I was going, maybe Banish Amuru Ziva, so much. And did I pop no bagandi paracha misa is the Utigania Simbe can eat Munuamari. I'm going to a church. Professor, one of the most embarrassing things for me was supporting Nelson. I was a fool. Ndandi singa woni, you see. But again, with a guy like Nelson, it's only one very curious. It's not going to be too funny. Understand them. Because you mona ari kure so. Achitaura is very charismatic, you know? Very charismatic. Very enjoyable to edit my visual stuff and so on. He gives you the good stuff, Nelson. And ukataura nae, so kutum bate Nelson. When zimure win name, I'm gonna spend that time na yaka wanda so that the contradictions emerge. Now you wonder about Peter, John, you don't know who he is. You don't know what you're dealing with. And one of the problems that we had with Nelson when we were working with him was just the extent of his dishonesty. You know, there's a point to which somebody lies to you that they are unworthy of the support of any right-minded person. So one of his cop-outs, if he was trying to maneuver out of a situation where he's not able to make a decision for whatever reason, he would simply respond by saying that he would wait to hear what God says. Now, this is outrageous within the context of professional, technical, private professional technical interaction. You can't, and it would be one thing if he was lying at rallies. He would then come and lie to us as well. He would come and lie to me. He would come and lie to Professor.
in the sense that he would be driving propaganda in the way that he uses propaganda at a rally or on social media. But even the people working deep within his office, his confidants, and it's not that we were strangers to Nelson. We were very, very close to him, and we had access at the highest level. But he was lying to us as well. And I'll give you an example, which is that the first one, which is that I asked him about the polling agents before the election. I said, what's the state of play with the polling agents? And he says, no, don't worry. All of that is completely sorted out. Not an issue at all. But clearly, he didn't have polling agents at all the polling stations, which is why, which brings us to the second lie again, that he lied to us that he had the V11s. And Excelgate would have been published much earlier than it was. But he kept on stringing Professor Long, saying, oh, I'll do this and that. But he never actually had those V11s. In the first place, he didn't have them, but he was lying. Then the other lie he told was that he had a nuclear option legally. So there was a reasonable amount of confidence that the guy knows what he's doing. You don't ever really think that somebody could put on such an act, knowing themselves to be entirely an imposter in this kind of environment. But that's precisely what has happened. So it's an issue. It's one of the reasons, again, before I forget, why you find that Excelgate says nothing about V11s. Actual final copy says nothing about V11s. It's more of the unprocedural manner in which ZEC conducted the election, which is something that they concede to themselves. I think there's a broader problem that has to be addressed in the sense of how do we relate. How do political leaders integrate their beliefs or their faith within politics, the context of national politics? Would it be acceptable, for example, if a politician anotenda mu midzimi yake akauya parhala kuti say ushita zvinhu zvake torasinafu yake pa mudombo what's the limit to ratinoita apedza mutombo kudaro bvati ndauzwa ne vadzimu vangu kuti rekedzai zvamurikuita pana meeting yapera. What's wrong with that? Because this is precisely the manner in which Nelson was operating his office when we worked with him. It's just an outrage. Or people are in a party meeting and all of a sudden someone is supposedly caught up in a trance and they're speaking in tongues. Wow. May God help us. It's very difficult to deal with that kind of situation, particularly if you're in my situation where you've oversold someone and now the thing is coming back to bite you. And that's precisely what happened in my case, that it really did come back to bite me. And I consider it one of unfortunate, really. It was unfortunate. Because I did not expect that he would conduct himself in that manner. I remember quite vividly the day when Mugabe is at Shamyarira's funeral, or the day that Shamyarira dies, or I'm not sure if it was the day after, but Mugabe goes to pay his respects. And I remember specifically what had happened is there was a young woman who had a baby with Trangirai who had gotten in touch with me, and she wanted some money in exchange for... Well, I'm not sure that's entirely accurate, actually. I think I'm the one who was trying to... Yeah, in fact, look, let me just tell the story in a slightly different way to save all parties involved any potential trouble. I remember very clearly that the day when Mugabe made those devil incarnate remarks, Damiare had died. And I remember it clearly because I was heading to the Holiday Inn. I had gone into the basement, I had some papers, and as soon as I put on my belt and I turned on the engine, it went straight to Star FM, and there was Mugabe talking. I knew that, yeah,
now I'm in trouble. Because Professor had warned me the week before, like, they're coming. And I just thought, this is outrageous. Why would they come? And I was naive. I was really naive. And the only reason why, we don't know what would have happened. Because they came at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. in the morning. But I had already left for work, you see. Because I was working with... there were only a few people who were useful. So effectively, I had to edit the paper by yourself. So by the time they got there, I was gone. And then somebody tipped me off. He says, wherever you are, don't come back. Wow. And that's... Wow. It was a lot. So they couldn't find me. And by then, by that time, the news starts getting out. Because then they come to Zim Papers. Because I had left a little burner phone that I was talking to some guy. Let's just say, yeah, some guy. So the people who probably kept me out of, might have been in prison right now. Actually, it's not a difficult story to stitch somebody up on, because it's complicated. Yeah, but back to the actual story. Mugabe is at Shamira's died. Mugabe has gone to pay his respects. And there I get in the car, and as soon as I switch on the engine, it jumps to Star FM, and I hear Mugabe saying, "Wakumana edu waga dingwa wataishanda now." Yeah, well, incarnate. It was like, this is some heavy stuff, you know? Some heavy stuff. And I don't think it was a lot of days after that, because then the other side saw the opportunity, which I know, let's pounce. Chaiva manjem daratsa amachi chipinda for the kill. But obviously they couldn't find me. Like I said, I already left for the office. And then when I discovered what was happening, I left, I think Naganda Kwamreo or something. That's what I went somewhere. And I switched off my phone.
I would periodically drive somewhere and switch it on to make a phone call, then drive off immediately afterwards. But by 5 p.m., I think things were now in place for me to... It was Mandisha, actually. Yeah, Mandisha was my lawyer at the time. And it was a lot. It was a lot. You know, and there's... I'm as bad as Mano Benga, actually. I think I could do it, you know. And someone is having a debate with you, whether over the vaccine or politics, and they'll take a picture of you in a moment of distress. Good job, system. But we're not opposed to the system. We just want to be the ones in command of it. We don't actually believe in these values. We don't believe in democracy. We simply want to be the ones who are in command of this system, whatever this is. One of the notable things, looking at it from a media standpoint, when this whole thing happens, Impi had been constituted. Now, Impi is an authoritative report, is the one who led that. But the tone that the media was taking, because what really was the major issue was my being hired as editor. That was the major issue, because there was irritation, you see. And now there was an accusation that actually Professor Moyo had been my handler when I was in the UK, and whatever I had said against the First Family was actually Professor Moyo saying it, which was completely outrageous, completely nonsensical. But he had been told it in such a way as to believe it. And it was crazy, actually. It was crazy stuff. And the media was taking the position, was not taking a position of trying to assist, you know. They seemed quite happy with the way that things were going, with language such as, "This is Jonathan Moyo's Waterloo." And yes, so all that second coming effort clearly came to naught when push came to shove. The media instantly was hoping that he's taken down. So if somebody was to ask me to describe Professor's mind, yeah, it is difficult to answer that authoritatively, because people relate with different people differently. So you never quite see the full spectrum of a person. So it's a difficult one to answer, but I could definitely give the characteristics of what
he's like, he's a high energy individual, high energy. He's an action kind of guy. He's one of these natural born leaders. Not in the sense of a guy who says I want to be president. I've never gotten that. In fact, he's actually said to me directly that he's unprompted, not interested. But he's interested in the society. He's interested in the community from which he emerges. He's interested in uplifting the standards of living. And he has gone past sort of having an appreciation of the subject matter to the extent that his subject is, in a sense, an extension of him. And I wrote some notes not too long ago, a few weeks ago, when I was having a chat with him, and he just went off on a tangent randomly. And I'm going to find that and read it to you. I have to, because it really does illustrate the kind of guy that he is. Because I then phoned him. These are some notes of what we talked about. Can I have the reference? And he says, well, I suppose I'll have to be the reference. It was coming from my head. And you think like, yeah, damn. Yeah, the guy is good. So he's highly analytical. He's able to think systematically about complex issues. He's able to generate original ideas and frameworks for understanding the world around him. And he has a deep understanding of the role in the dynamics of political institutions and society. And the example I want to read will illustrate that, because for you to imagine that this kind of thought was coming out raw out of somebody's mind, it sort of shows you the positioning. So it's a different place. He's highly intelligent. He's a smart guy. And he's a guy who has a lot to offer in terms of insight and understanding of the world. Now, yeah, you don't, if you're sort of paying attention, you can't miss the way that the mind is wired toward frameworks. He's always thinking in terms of frameworks, because whatever he's trying to do, whatever solution he's trying to propose, it has to be something that can be scaled, that it has to be sustainable, because he's always thinking at the level of society, at the level of the population. He's not a guy who's thinking like, oh, look, let me do something nice for my village and that will be it, we're done. So he's a substantive guy, very interesting conversation, great conversation, wonderful sense of humor, young at heart, really. So these are the notes that I was talking about. And because these are notes that I was taking, I didn't attempt to fix them, because then that would perhaps, there's stuff that I missed, and I think it's better for me to leave it the way that it is and read just the notes that I have than to try and correct it and add that, because then that might distort what was said. But it reads, a political community, the administrative community, the dynamics of the political community, as well as the operation of the political community, are not based by design. Their primary interest is inherently temporal. It deals with questions of the day and may invoke rhetoric about the future, about future generations, extant current history. The dominant form of decision-making authority is headline news. Who is doing this? Who is getting what? Who is not getting what? A better functioning society has a non-political community which is based and dominated by institutions that have key preoccupations and permanent interests in that society versus a political society which is temporal. These institutions include moral, religious, and traditional institutions. The functioning of these institutions is so important that if they are none, there will be serious problems coming from the political community. Rule-based institutional legal rational authority. There are 7 of them. 3 are civilian, 4 are securocratic. The civilian ones are the judiciary, the means of getting in and staying elected. That's political society people. This is the electoral body. Then there's the civil service. Public service. Then the securocratic ones are the military, the police, the intelligence services, and the prisons. If any of these cease to be rule bound, we are screwed. That's a verbatim quote.
Moral institutions have their internal logic, which is tested by the strength of the moral tenant. A society that lacks these three things, political, moral, and rule-bound institutions, is in trouble. The political community in Zimbabwe pervades everything. Politics and administration, politics as administration. So this is Professor Moyo's mind. He's just having a conversation, and this is the routine. This is a routine. But you see how the mind thinks in frameworks, how his mind thinks in terms of structure. How do you structure a society? How do you make that society sustainable? What are the key institutions and what is the dynamic between those institutions for you to have a society that is stable? Very interesting paper in which Ibo Manda's features from the early 1990s, but I think it would be a good read. I'm going to try and extract the... Yeah, well, I think it's actually better if people just go to JSTOR and read it for themselves, because it's a bit of a sensitive one. But it's the same kind of conversation. You're still looking at Jonathan Moyo analyzing the society from a framework perspective. The perspective is always the framework. And earlier I made the point about what Professor said to me about Nelson when I wanted to quit earlier on. And he says, listen, when you have access to a person who's in a position of authority or is potentially going to be a position of authority, it is your responsibility to exercise that influence as best as you can to influence them in a positive way. And I cannot understand why anyone would think that it was a mistake or it was some kind of flip-flopping for Professor to join ZANU-PF after what had happened with the constitution, where the opposition knew that this is a good constitution but they said no anyway and sabotaged it. The idea of him working with the opposition was just ridiculous. Why the hell would he do that? Why on earth would he work with them after what look at it this way. Professor Moyo is talking about the land reform. He is pressing the government, saying that the process is not moving fast enough. This is early 90s. This is his position, early 90s. Now, he goes in with a new constitution, allows the people of Zimbabwe to get their hands on the land, which is what the liberation struggle was about. And that constitution is rejected. And it's rejected because of campaigning by the opposition working in codes with the farmers. What's your next move if you truly are? And Professor went to Zambia first during the liberation struggle. And then there was this whole thing of this whole tribal thing where Ndebele people were getting killed I think it was in Zambia. And they ended up being taken to Tanzania. But then after that, he ended up going to the United States where he finished his high school. But if you look at that history, you find that consciousness, that political consciousness was always there. If you look at that history, that here's a young guy who has to finish school and he wants to go and fight in the liberation struggle. Stuff happens. He ends up going to the United States. He tries to push through this new constitution that would allow a more accelerated land reform. It's voted no. What do? You join the guys who voted no. It doesn't make sense. And in any case, then you look at... there was this school of thought that when things start getting ugly in ZANU, the intellectuals left. So there was always a debate, I made understand, about was this a mistake? Have we surrendered this thing? Well, I leave that for people to decide for themselves. But going in to ZANU-PF, working with ZANU-PF, appears to have been the only card that was available if you wanted to win this fight and have it be sustainable. I can't see how someone who's voted against something you believe in so strongly that you end up as allies with, it just doesn't work. And when you listen to Professor Moyo talking about the land reform program, if you haven't sort of followed that story from its beginning, you sort of think like, oh, well, here's a propagandist or this spin doctor sounding very persuasive. But it's not an act. The guy is a virulent... No, virulent is the wrong word. He's as is violent, but he's a forceful nationalist. He believes it.
He believes it. I
wouldn't say he's not a racist. I don't believe he's racist. But I think he's a lot tougher on... he's distinctively tough on white people. And I asked him once why that was. And he says, it's because I know what they think. Because when I was born, there was no pretending. There was no pretending. They simply made you aware of what you were, as far as they were concerned. So, yeah, he doesn't... He won't tolerate... even just the hint of racial bias, he won't. But yes, that's the story of that. At least that's the first part of it, of Professor Moyo going to ZANU-PF after the new constitution is rejected, a decision that everyone now agrees was a foolish one. Now, fair enough. After getting in, what next? What happens? There's this very interesting thing that that Prof has, where if you're talking about that new constitution, he has a very good reason, and I hope this one he'll talk about and explain it himself. I won't possibly do it justice, but he's talking about cycles, political cycles, where after 20 years people's eyes open up and they realize, what have we done? And then there's that opportunity, that opening for a transformation, for change to happen, and that constitution was the change, but it was rejected. That constitution was the change. So that's the context in which, as far as I see it, that his military contributions should be regarded. Jonathan Moyo is a deep intellectual thinker who operates at a different level from anyone. I didn't know the level at which he operated when I first interacted with him until one day he gave me an impromptu lecture on the good society. That's the moment that I realized that I was in the presence of greatness. He is a sovereign individual who has no master. He's a person who is a mental risk taker, who is able to channel the unknown, throwing rational thinking out of the window when it's necessary to create new solutions, and coming up with ideas that are truly beautiful. He has a sarcastic, irreverent nature, and I think he sort of enjoys poking people. He has an ability to put his mind to work when he decides to, and to channel his abilities whenever he decides to. He's a funny guy. He could have been in a different life. He could have been an actor, a writer, a comedian. He's really a funny guy. He's really a funny guy. And his nature is bold, it's assertive, and he has noble intentions. And he is someone who's willing to support people and projects that he cares about. He's extremely protective of his community, of his friends, of his colleagues, and he's resilient. He's resilient. He's not the kind of person who faces a challenge and then collapses or surrenders under it. When he's faced with a challenge, he's got what it takes to stand and to fight. I think he's one of his greatest gifts. Is precision. One of his greatest gifts is precision. The ability to at the spur of the moment, he's able to spot a contradiction very quickly. I remember one conversation. He said to me, we were talking about somebody we were working with, who was being a bit funny. And he said to me, the problem is that he won't tell you how much the contract is worth, he said. And I replied, well, he'll tell you, but not the actual amount. Then he replied very quickly, that's what I said. Took me a moment to process, and I realized that that's precisely what he'd said. So he's very quick. He's at a speed. He's very deliberate in his choice of words. So kana usinga terere manje kunzi chichiri kuti kanokubata. Now, when that kind of person is in the position, information minister. Kana muri vanhu vema porridge, amukwanise kumubata manje. And I suspect that this is one of the reasons why he rubs some people up the wrong way, because they find that ability to retort quickly. They're irritated by it, and it's not something that they can beat. And I think his great misfortune was being appointed to the Ministry of Information, which is a ministry that was well suited to his skills. And this is happening at a time when Zimbabwe is there's a lot going on politically, and it requires someone who's really forceful, someone who's dominant, someone who's aggressive, and somebody who has the wit to pull it off, you know. And he put on a good show. I'm not quite sure what people expected him to do, whether or not people thought that he would be at a press conference or the media would catch up with him and ask him a question. And then he says, oh, wow, that's a really good question. Yeah, wow, I didn't thought of it that way. I think you're right that the government is wrong. I think the president is wrong. Well, thank you for showing me in a different light. That's not even in the most vibrant democracy in the world does that happen. That's not part of the job description. Look what's happening right now in the United States, in Western societies with COVID and these mRNA jabs. The government position, the job of the person who's defending that is to do precisely that, which is to defend. Saka, maida kutaite sei. Nzivati no, ah, inti matipata wena wana, ish, ya bataba wamgabe wakataza wena. What kind of fantasy is that? Doesn't happen. We see right now, just even still in the opposition, you'll find spokespersons will not concede the error of their leader. You won't hear them concede. You won't hear Maere or Stalos saying Nelson made a mistake. They won't, even when he's made an apparent mistake or he's told an obvious falsehood. They won't concede to it. Now, the suggestion that somehow the Minister of Information should have given some latitude is outrageous. It's just unreasonable. And this is his great misfortune, that he was the right man for the job at that time in Zimbabwe's history. And because he has been talking about land reform since before 1992, and this is something he believes in. He's a nationalist. And those things come together, and the rest is history. Or even the idea that he bears some kind of responsibility or some kind of special responsibility, you know. I don't understand. He was not the Minister of Finance. He was not the Minister of Foreign Affairs. He was not the Minister of Defense. He was not the Minister of Home Affairs. How would he bear responsibility? Because he somehow did his job too well. You won't hear any talk about the people who are actually holding critical portfolios, the security portfolios, finance portfolios. Nobody talks about them. Everybody talks about Jonathan Moyo. Why? And some of his he's got a lot of these. He's really good at creating names and quotable quotes. Yeah, that one is second nature. That comes as second nature. He's come up with quite a few, he's come up with quite a few. There's normalizing the abnormal. Then I think the classic one is, he who appoints can also disappoint. Then Zimbabwe will never be a colony again. The other one is, Harare is not Zimbabwe and Zimbabwe is not Harare. Then this one sort of got him into a bit of trouble. He says, when the army is deployed, it's not a picnic. Then this one again got him into a little bit of trouble. This was, he says, you thought you were untouchable, but now the long arm of the law is going to touch you everywhere. And I'm not sure people actually quite understand a lot of this, how prolific Jonathan Moyo is. Right now, he's working on an Ama Piano song. He's working on a song, Oliver Mtukudzi. That one might be a hot one. The Oliver Mtukudzi one is is interesting. He's prolific. Now, the way that Jonathan Moyo, I always thought that perhaps the guy commissions music. That's what I thought. I always thought that the guy commissions music, so he'll pay a musician and say, listen, can we have a song about football, like Go Warriors? That's what I assumed, that he is commissioning some musicians, telling them what he's looking for, and then they're going out there, finding a melody, writing a song, then recording the song, then coming back to him. Then he say, Mr. Minister, how do you like this piece of cake? Then he says, oh no, I love it. No, he writes, Jonathan Moore perhaps writes over 30 songs a year. He writes music, and for the exception is, could be this Oliver Mtukudzi song, which he says has been a very different process for him. But in the time I've worked with him, his music writing is cerebral. It's a purely mechanical process. He studied music when as an undergrad, and he will write the music according to the rules of the music, and he will ensure that he finds the melody. So when he does songs like Go Warriors, Come to Victoria Falls down in Zimbabwe,
Come to Victoria Falls down in Zimbabwe, Come to Victoria Falls,
Nora, yes, Nora. That's Jonathan, that's Professor Moyo. That and again, when you look at a song like Nora, Elliot Manyika sings it, the Brian Mteki, it really shows you what kind of person he is. He's invited for some event where he hears Brian Mteki and his band playing this song, but it's not quite packaged, and he says, oh, this thing has potential. And he brings him in the studio. He's raises funding for a full album. And he says, let's do this, let's do a video. And he goes all the way. He is interested in supporting projects, not necessarily because they're going to profit him personally and that he's going to make money from them. No, if something is apparently beneficial to the society, he'll support it. He is, when I say he's a natural born leader, what I mean is that he's a guy who is always ready and willing to answer the call of duty. He's not the kind of guy who you say, hey, can you see this constitutional violation? Then he says, how is it my business? That's not who he is. It's not about how much money will we make from it. That's not what it's about. It's about the society. It's about the good society. Then Pambili Lokufunda. This is Jonathan. These songs are big on radio at different times and different in different ways. In terms of authorship, he's a serious guy. Voting for democracy, it's the standard on elections. It is the standard. You see, Vana John Makumbe, in their writings, they would be citing Voting for Democracy. It's an authoritative text. It's a really good book. It's a serious book. In 300 years, if you want to look back what was happening in Zimbabwe during history, they'll be reading Jonathan Moyo. He's a guy who's up for a challenge. How does Pax Afro come up? So there's this challenge after the local content is put in place. People are saying, oh, listen, these local artists don't have the skills. They can't write music. This is never going to work. Then he says, he challenges himself and he says, listen, I'm going to write 100 songs. Choose the best 26. And that was Pax Afro, the double disc album. So when they said, no, we can't write music in Zimbabwe, he said, look, I'm going to show you that it can be done, that we can produce pop music, good, authentic, local pop music that works. And he wrote 100 songs. And then he says, okay, now choose the 25, 26 that you like and let's do an album. Then find young people who are talented, who can sing, and let's get them in the studio. Let's do a great production.
So the whole idea behind Pax Afro is it's a demonstration that it can be done. It's a demonstration that it can be done. So you realize when you see what inspires these actions, now that you've gone two decades and you have this local music scene, which now feels very natural. It seems like it was always like that. But no, it wasn't. It took a visionary to realize that the only way we can build a local music industry is if we give the local talent space to grow without having to fight for space with foreign talent. And people will say, generally, the way that people look at things in the society is not really objective. In 2008, Jonathan Moyo took Zect Court over the limitation report and the failure to publish. And they wanted to have the nomination take place without the report. When he was a minister in 2013, he took... And then there have been some accusations. There have been these accusations that, Jonathan Moyo did Maim Juru a great injustice and got fired from government. Well, yes, he did play quite a significant role in that. But I think what people forget is, what people are unaware of is the background. Maim Juru is not a victim. She's a perpetrator. She's an aggressor. She's a dishonest political actor. She's the one who provokes a fight that she ultimately is unable to sustain, and she ends up with the bloody nose out of government. But when MP happens, this MP report, she tells Mugabe that this whole MP thing is a regime change project. These are people who are moving around the country, laying the seeds or laying the foundation for a grand plan, and that people like myself and Mududuzi and Joram Nyati, who were viewed as being oppositional, were part of a grand plan, a regime change grand plan. Then this is about the time when you have the Cuthbert Dube salary gate scandal. And she claims that exposing those things is again a regime change conspiracy by Jonathan Moyo. And at the time when all of this is happening, Maim Juru is in the same camp with Onyongwe and crew and the CIO. And these really are the people who are stitching us up. Maim Juru was not innocent, and Vachishanda Nema allies Avoku Central Intelligence Organization, they were stitching up a narrative. And Mdaroya Vaido to move visa proposition. People think Kunzvainye Pirwaganzimam Juru Angatoronga Soro Kunzat Mdambra by surprise attack, you know. Tunugato Vara Roshawfungota not routine Aish Shandato 40 Roshandato Vanaipa Chigaro. So yeah, he got her. He got it good, but she got exactly what she deserved. Avan, she deserves no mercy, because mukona munari willing kunzi munana mosha ya para. But for the sake of power, she's willing to let someone who has done no wrong go to prison. That's a wicked woman. Munakaipa. Maim Juru, I was right. It's power at any cost. I was right. So Maim Juru, there are no apologies due to her. Akuna anfana kupati sori, yay. Sorry, no apologies will be forthcoming.
Yeah,
Jonathan Moyo would fit into the category, perhaps, post-independence of cabinet ministers, intellectuals who created the framework of the direction which society is supposed to take. You have Stan Mudenge, Nathan Shamyarira, and Jonathan Moyo. It's not in doubt, it's not in contest. That is who he is. He is had a profound impact on the direction that the country has taken at specific points. It's unfortunate that he was not able to win the cooperation of the opposition when he was trying to get that new constitution, but that was the moment. 20 years, that was the moment to do it. And land reform, defending that aggressively, it is what it is. But yeah, he's up there with Stad Budenge and Nathan Shamiarira in the amount of influence that that he's had on the course of events in Zimbabwe. The history will be written eventually, and then we'll comment properly on whether or not that contribution has been positive or negative. We'll eventually have to give comment, but what we know is that he certainly has had a significant role in the direction that Zimbabwe has taken. I don't believe that the manner in which the public has evaluated his role is entirely objective. I think it's not serious evaluation or analysis of the man or his actual contributions, but it's which side, which basket are you in? And if you happen to be in the wrong basket, then we will malign you and describe you as this and that. But oh yes, certainly. He's there with Vanastan Mudenge and Nathan Shamiarira. And those were serious guys. Stan Mudenge, when he's doing his PhD, he learns Portuguese because he wants to read it in the original language, because he's worried that the translations might be wrong. They're crazy. That could never be me. But yes, banana pingis kwane mabuku, who are willing to go there to get the detail, you know. So if anything is going to happen, if there's going to be, you can't evaluate a political leader without having any regard for what his constituents think about him. So yes, of course, you have the whole thing at a policy level happening. But if you really want to understand Professor Moyo, go to Cholocho. Go and talk to the people of Cholocho. The people of Cholocho understood exactly what he was doing, and they appreciated him for who he was, and they do appreciate him for who he is. So the suggestion that some guy can just be sitting somewhere, akango gara, someone about, I know you, wakaura ya nyika, nanarutu mchemero, deadzo, kaku Cholocho, nanarutu mchemero.
In these circumstances, the progressive democratic forces must throw everything at their disposal against the government.
Is it not intimidation for people who head a political party that wants to govern in this country to sit down with legislators in America and write a law which they call the Zimbabwe Democracy Bill? Is that not intimidation? They want to allow foreign legislators to make laws for us in advance of our election, telling the people of Zimbabwe, vote this way, if you vote that way, we will slap these sanctions on you. You want to talk to us about intimidation?
You're the cold rich thunder lyricist. So sit back, relax, and let me take you on an expedition to the wildest we call another mission. To the nook, the zombies. Got you turning yummy, yummy. Baka timba, busy, where zombies. Matino, wanna hove and put a rose, even in my gate. Got you turning yummy, yummy. Baka timba, busy, where zombies. Matino, wanna hove and put a rose, even.
Asibamba nesonke saki ilizwe letu ngoba imfundo silayo le technology. Asibamba nesonke saki ilizwe letu ngoba imfundo silayo le technology. Ngatisanganise pfungwa dzedu tisimudzire nyika yedu ruzivo tinarwo ne technology. Ngatisanganise pfungwa dzedu. La 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 la.
Manje zvingaitere kunzi apa ndanana ka bonus katinongoraridza weri wedwe. Ngatipe bonus ngomana ngadzoke atipe bonus akune izvozvo. Ngadzoke atipe bonus. Ngadzoke
ngaiwa munonekedzwa chipi ngadzoke pano kuzai yari pabasa dzoka parme we.
Ah inunanta rona ezvakanaka Emmanuel Ramaka. Kudzi chuburo samo might be peas have some more.
Discussion of a plot to assassinate a head of state in the Commonwealth take place. We should sit down and say, yes, Pastor, that's okay.
We dialogue all the time. Dialogue does not solve anything. Dialogue is a human condition and a permanent human condition. People want action, and the time for action has come. The kind of action that will lead to an outcome. And the outcome must be a democratic outcome without ZANU-PF and without Robert Mugabe. There must be action. But action of that kind is not teletype. It is not ad hoc news. It has to be carefully planned and it has to be pursued with dedication and commitment.
What greater intimidation is there than a leader of a political party supported by some powerful countries in the world calling on a powerful neighbor to cut off electricity, cut off fuel supply, cut off transport links? Is that not intimidation?
In 1992, the Journal of Modern African Studies published an article by Jonathan Moyo entitled State Politics and Social Domination in Zimbabwe. In the article, he critiques analytical approaches, and specifically the ones that he's got quite a large list of them, which he says from the very beginning are not worthwhile jumping into, but he grabs onto two. And that's Afro-Marxism and neocolonialism, and how those were used to understand state formation and social domination in Zimbabwe. And his argument was that they tended to create templates, a kind of a template where it gives you what you're looking for, that however you bend it, whatever variables you put inside it, it will give you the same conclusion. And this despite leaving about unexamined or self-contradictory presuppositions. And one of what caught my attention in this particular piece when I was reading it was that one of the scholars that he criticizes is Dr. Ibo Mandaza. Now, the debate around the issues discussed in this article are actually still relevant today. And it would be interesting to see if both Moyo and Mandaza would be willing to relitigate their positions and engage in a contemporary dialogue on these issues. It would be quite a blockbuster. I would be accused of favoritism, but I'll have to give round one to Professor Moyo. And his argument is simple enough. And he starts off in typical Moyo Zing, as he says, there's a difference between information and knowledge. And no, not necessarily Dr. Mandaza, but he was going after the idea. And he says that the existing corpus of literature in Africa has not yielded a mainstream understanding of the basic aspects of state politics. And the point that he's making is that people will write all these lofty, complicated things, but at the end of it, you are left with no understanding, that you could not derive an understanding of what was happening in Zimbabwe for the past 12 years. This is in 1992, by reading these neocolonial or Afro-Marxist writings, that they were not useful. And he sets out a 9,000 word piece. It's good stuff. You need to read this. It's in the Journal of Modern African Studies. And I hope that they can relitigate. It's interesting stuff, because if you read this, you begin to understand. And if we had a large enough body of the population that had an understanding of these issues, vanhu pfungwa dzedu dzaisatambwa nadzo nemapolitician. I hope I've done it justice, but perhaps I haven't. I need to perhaps touch on some of what Mandaza had said, and what debate him at least to some extent. And Mandaza's argument is that there's a revolutionary mythology that's been created by scholars, and he calls them radicals in North America and Western Europe. And then he says there's been a failure to re-examine the historical, socio-economic, and strategic factors that influenced the Zimbabwean Revolution, and have instead... Instead, there's been an attribution of everything that's gone wrong
to the African petit bourgeoisie. Petit bourgeoisie is good mbingana, so it's not the real capitalists. Is this mbinga? It's tumbingana that can either find themselves gonna mushana mo working class, but otherwise I'm going to out my business power to my business and so on when times are good. But they are in an insecure kind of position, and the other argument that Mandaza makes is that he attributes the problems that Zimbabwe has as being the result of serious deficiencies in the nationalist movement, and he concludes that state politics in Zimbabwe is neo-colonial, driven by the weight and influence of imperialist hegemony. And Mandaza goes on to claim that the African petit bourgeoisie may one day realize the futility of trying to balance such an antagonistic contradiction, and that impelled by the march of the class and growing consciousness of the working people, it may find itself again at the head of a struggle that will be both anti-imperialist and anti-capitalist. As it were, you're to my dad out of fear. If you look at the standard of conversation that was happening, whether or not I disagree with what Dr. Mandaza was saying, just the fact that this kind of conversation was happening. And Professor Moyo responds to this argument by saying that, and he says, this is, I'll give you some verbatim quotes here, some of the interesting ones. Let's see which ones. Yes. He says, Mandaza's apparent defense of the African petit bourgeoisie is paradoxical because his own analysis of politics in Zimbabwe has embodied the same criticized revolutionary mythology. Is such wishful thinking in this case is referring to the idea that the petit bourgeoisie is going to lead another class struggle against capital and against the imperialists? He says, is such wishful thinking not designed to protect the socioeconomic class of which Mandaza and other scholars are a part? Another one, he says, upon close scrutiny and putting aside mythological predictions about the revolutionary potential of the African petit bourgeoisie, Mandaza's analysis and conclusions about state politics in Zimbabwe are not qualitatively different from those of scholars in North America and Western Europe, whom he has accused of radical paternalism, maintained at the expense of those who have a more direct interest in the furtherance of the revolution. And if you need to find this paper, I'm sure you can find it somewhere free of charge online. But you need to find this paper and read it. It's quite interesting. He goes on to level what I think is legitimate criticism, to say you can't have an argument. It's sort of like this idiotic thing. But I have to give it to him. That one was a funny line. I've had to borrow it myself. You know, I've used it quite a few times. This is what the line that Hopo used when the issue EMA structures came up, and Professor and myself started talking about it. And I took a slightly different... You can't have an argument, yekuti, radical paternalism, and maintained at the expense of those who have a more direct interest in the furtherance of the revolution. Professor rightly goes ahead to say we can't have academic discourse. You can't suggest that your idea is more valid than the next guy on account of your nationality. It is, and it's quite relevant to the issue of Vanachingono Shantaura Kunzi. And I'm sitting part made. You cannot say that an argument is valid. But party menu, party menu. No, madness. Penga iti. But kupenga mshimbo ine vanhu vanopenga saka zvoneke unogona kuti omberu wa maoko kunzi makachenjera zvisingaiti uchitara zvisina basa uchitara zvisina basa. I leave you with the words of Professor Jonathan Moyo from 1992 on the land reform. When you listen to this stuff, you realize that the guy is actually quite consistent. You look at what they say in 1992, you go read at the constitution that was rejected. Then you listen to what he says when he's talking about Rambai Makashinga. He's a guy who believes it. One of the stories that I forgot to tell was the same period as this, a few years before this, a white farmer caught some African women vanotora huni zviya vatrespasa mupurazi make kubva vachisaembedza nyemusoro famba musina kupfeka muchibuda and vana prof they were crazy agitating kuti purazi ngaritorwe. There's no contradiction in that. It's the same guy saying the same thing over a very long period of time, but the commentary is driven by ignorance. Thank you very much for joining me in this podcast. It's been a long one. I wish we could continue to talk. There's lots to talk about. But unfortunately, this is as far as we can come. Thank you again for joining me. Bye-bye. Speak soon.
State Politics and Social Domination in Zimbabwe, authored by Jonathan Nathaniel Moyo, published in the Journal of Modern African Studies, June 1992, Volume 30, Number 2, Part 4, titled Land Reform, read by Charles Haidt. Towards the end of 1990, the government began to address the demands being made not only for more resettlement, but also for better land. Hence the decision to amend Section 16 of the so-called Lancaster House Constitution of 1980, which had entrenched procedures restricting land reform through state action. The Constitution Amendment Act, No. 11 of 1990, was designed to oust the court's jurisdiction to review government decisions on compulsory land acquisition and the adequacy of compensation. This now needs to be fair and paid in reasonable time, instead of being adequate, as determined by the market price, and prompt, as was the case previously. The validity of the ensuing widespread complaints about the new land reform policy was vigorously queried by the president, unfairness. Now, was it ever fair to seize land from the people in the first place? Asked if ousting the jurisdiction of the courts was not a sign that his government had no respect for the rule of law, Mugabe replied, "We have respected the rule of law right through, but on this fundamental question, which is a political question, it's a deep-seated grievance. I can't be dragged to court. I, Robert Mugabe, with ancestral generations far back, I be dragged to court by a settler who came only 90 years ago, who will claim that the land we are taking is his. Morally, we can't accept that. The constitutional amendment, and especially Mugabe's assertions in its defense, stirred controversy among the country's commercial farmers even before its adoption by Parliament and prompted the Chief Justice, a white Zimbabwean who had been a judge before independence, to make the following statement: a constitution stands on certain fundamental principles, which are its structural pillars. If these pillars are demolished or even damaged, the constitutional edifice will fall. Consequently, any law which has that effect would be pronounced invalid by the judiciary. A change of the constitution is permissible if consistent with its basic objectives, and if the constitution is able to survive without loss of its identity, its basic structure must always remain the same. A change is impermissible if it abrogates or emasculates the pivotal or fundamental features. He also claimed that the proposed removal of the court's jurisdiction signified a lack of confidence in, or, at the very least, a desire not to brook any possible interference by, the judiciary, and that this was likely to engender the belief in those persons whose land might be acquired that the express right to be paid fair compensation was nothing but an empty-handed gesture. It is not surprising that this kind of preemptive strike by the judiciary against both the legislative and executive branches of government was widely criticized as impolitic. According to Luke Vlaba, a lecturer in law, there is nothing unique or novel in the government fixing the price of land. There are, after all, numerous other products whose prices have been or are controlled by the government. Nor is there anything manifestly unjust in seeking to achieve a more equitable distribution of land by regulating the manner in which compensation for compulsory acquisition of land shall be effected. However, Vlaba also felt that it was necessary to emphasize the implications of that aspect of the amendment likely to become a major constitutional problem. It is this removal of the courts which seems to be the main source of controversy over the act, and in this regard, one might say it is more about every individual's right to have the protection of the law through the judicial system than it is about who should own an acre of Zimbabwe's land. But some informed observers wonder to what extent, if at all, ZANU-PF intends to implement what is really a political statement designed to remind all concerned that the peasants form the social base of the ruling party and that they need to see, or at least, to hear, that something is being done about the demand for more land if the present national leaders are to maintain their legitimacy. Judging by the government's past approaches and by the demands of the current ESAP, there is little indication that it has either the will or the requisite capacity to do anything drastic that might jeopardize international aid or local confidence by dispossessing white farmers of their land without fair compensation, or in any massive fashion. Given the social origins of the ZANU-PF government, and the reservations long expressed about the inadequacies of the 1979 Lancaster House Agreement, it would surely have been unrealistic not to expect that the latter would be amended, even sooner rather than so recently. At long last, the peasants who are pressing for more and better land have the constitution supporting their political demands, at least symbolically. But only time will tell how this works out in practice.